Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to The Media Podcast, your guide to the biggest media stories of the week. I'm Matt Deegan. On the show today, the BBC announces a big investment in fact-checking, but can BBC Verify stand up to the internet? It's Radar Week and it's boom time for commercial radio. We disclose whose numbers are up and down at the UK's biggest networks. Also on the programme, where did all the unscripted television go? Who lost out at the BAFTAs? And Vice hits rock bottom. All that plus a game of radio charades, he sighs, on the media quiz. What could go wrong? That's all coming up in this edition of the Media Podcast. In the news this week, Montana becomes the first state in America to ban TikTok. The law will come into effect at the strike of midnight on January the 1st, 2024. So bad luck for Montana's New Year's Eve parties. More allegations have been put to the Mirror's defense team in the phone hacking trial brought by Prince Harry and others. One such story is that a leading Mirror journalist allegedly blackmailed the company as it attempted to cover up phone hacking, something the paper denies. The trial continues. Meanwhile, the This Morning studio has been a hotbed of scintillating nothingness as viewers stayed glued to see any hint of a meltdown that is reportedly happening behind the scenes. The Daily Mail brought in a body language expert who said Ms. Willoughby held up a tablet at one point as part of a barrier ritual. No such awkwardness here, of course, where we're live from the London podcast studios. I've got two media experts here with me to cover some more stories shaking up the industry. Joining me today, returning to the podcast for the first time since the Edinburgh TV Festival last year, is Ian Rumsey, Director of ITN Productions. Hi, Ian.
Good to see you.
It's lovely to see you too. The news cycle doesn't seem to be getting any slower, does it?
Keeps on speeding up. And it's, you know, it's a relentless cycle.
And a busy week for you guys.
Yeah, it's been a very busy week in news. There is a lot going on, from Harry and Meghan and the car chase to Ukraine and Zelensky and the Prime Minister's visit to Japan. It's, you know, it's constantly shifting.
And most importantly, an awards win.
Yeah, Channel 4 News, a BAFTA win for their programme from the Ukraine, which all of ITN are really proud about. It was a fantastic show and an amazing win. And the Channel 4 News team thoroughly deserved. And a great speech by Matt Fry, I would say, as well. He really did a great speech. Fantastic. A well-deserved BAFTA. Some would say not all of the BAFTAs went to the right people, but that one absolutely did.
So we might talk about that a bit later. Also with us, he's a commercial strategy manager at the BBC, but his views are his own. It's Adam Bowie.
Hi, Matt.
It's a busy week in your world, but also you're kind of like me. You have stumbled into sort of a Radar expert hole, which you keep having
my little weird side hustle of Radar. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think we'll talk about it later, but there's been a lot of numbers coming out recently with some Midas data and the Ofcom doing some podcast research not too long ago. So those, aside from my day-to-day job, have been keeping me busy.
So if we think about Radar before we get into the details, in the day-to-day style, if you could sum up Radar in one word, what would it be?
Great for commercial radio.
Okay, that's more than one word, but I'll let you off. Right, okay, so the BBC have unveiled a new project on Wednesday, BBC Verify, which promises radical transparency. Adam, have you looked at this? How's it going to work?
Yeah, I think it's been Deborah Turnis's big new venture, I think, and it's pulling together a bunch of things that probably have existed a bit in places, but sort of bringing them together, giving them a name, I think giving them something that the audience can look for. So, you know, for example, you know, the Roz Atkins videos, which are explainer videos which have been going on, which isn't quite the same thing, but that stretches into it. And I think it's just sort of, it's pulling together some of that data and analysis, some of that disinformation side of things, which I think is a real issue, not just in the UK, but globally. And the verification, you know, there's a lot of video out there, there's a lot of social media stuff, and it's really clever, some of the things you can do. You know, I sat in actually on a talk from some of my colleagues, you know, showing what you can do with satellite data now, because satellite imagery, I think it used to be pretty expensive. It's still, I don't think it's cheap, but you can order it quite quickly. And so if you want to see what's going on, you know, on the front lines of battles or whatever, getting really, really up to date and doing some smart stuff with some of that, it's really quite impressive.
I mean, Ian, this appears to be quite an investment by the BBC. Do you think it'll have an impact on their reporting?
Yeah, I mean, I know Deborah very well. I worked with her for many years, and this has always been at the heart of everything that she kind of stands for, trust and transparency. And I think that there's never been a more important time to really, really double down on eradicating misinformation, disinformation, two different things. And, you know, I think in Deborah's mind, this is about pulling back the curtain a little bit. If you really want to trust us, then you need to understand everything that we do and everything that goes into journalism. Fact-checking has been around a long time, and Channel 4 News, which we talked about a few moments ago, you know, have been at the forefront of fact-check. You know, it's so important for PSBs. I think Lucy Fraser was talking today about the importance of trust public service content. So I think it's enormously important. Good journalism comes at a cost, but the value of it has never been more vital right now with AI, with everything that's going on. You know, knowing that you can go somewhere, knowing how something was gathered, how the information was gathered, and that you can absolutely trust in its veracity is really, really important.
I mean, Adam, there's a bit of a sort of trust deficit from some members of the public in traditional media. I mean, if you look on the comments of Twitter, and even more now with the new blue ticks on Twitter, not particularly fans of mainstream media, and actually watching Elon Musk this week be interviewed, he himself doesn't seem to trust a lot. Is it important for broadcasters to maybe even go beyond what they would expect they need to do to show their working?
I think they really do. I think, you know, undoubtedly trust has gone down. I think you look at something like the Reuters Digital News Report, it does show it over time, it's shown it sort of ebbing away. Unfortunately, that's probably the sort of, you know, the fractionalization of society to a large part and the way the world has progressed. And so you probably do need to almost like overcorrect a bit to really try and win back that belief, because, you know, people sometimes maybe they do believe something they read online. It is kind of curious that some complete stranger that you read some comment of online, somehow that gels with you more than your own eyes and ears with something that, you know, that you've been brought up with, quite probably in many cases.
There's also the confusion between taking opinion as fact. We live in a world of opinionated journalism, opinionated TV and radio hosts, and it's very easy, I think, for people to take one person's view as their truth, if you like, and that to become the story. And separating opinion from well-sourced factual journalism is really important.
I mean, they've brought together 60 journalists as part of BBC Verify, which is significant. It is like 60 journalists versus the internet. I mean, is it enough? Is it enough to be able to do the right checking or to show up this mis and disinformation?
I mean, you know, how many do you need? you know, if you're taking on Twitter and social media, that's literally like going to every person who's got a mobile phone and saying, are you sure that what you've said is true? You have to start somewhere. 60 feels a pretty well-resourced team, I would say. And, you know, and hats off to them. You know, it's really important whether you're BBC or Sky or Channel 4 or ITV, Channel 5, you know, good, solid, verified journalism is really important, and it's really important that, you know, in the media bill, that the playing field is levelled so that PSBs are able to do that.
Other news this week, a broadcaster workers' union, BECTU, declared an emergency over the unprecedented lack of work in the unscripted TV sector so far this year. Whilst US broadcasters packed the schedule with shows requiring no writers, the situation seems pretty bleak in the UK. I hadn't been really aware of this, Ian. What's going on?
I think it's tight, and it's getting tighter. I think all of the broadcasters are feeling the pinch, and I think they've all been a bit surprised that the ad market hasn't picked up as quickly as they thought. Commissions are hard to come by, that's for sure. I think ITN Productions, I don't want this to become an advert for us, but we've been pretty fortunate in that we got a lot of business in early in the year, and we won a lot of business. And, you know, the Jeremy Vine contract was extended for 5 years, and the show's been extended. And both in the States and in the UK, we got a lot of green lights early in the year. It's a genuine thing.
Are you seeing what a commissioner saying when you're going to them saying, what have you got next? And they're going, not a lot.
They're being incredibly cautious. They're saying that money is tight. That they're hoping it picks up in quarter three and quarter four. That they need to be, that they're being really risk averse, and they've got to double down on things that they know are going to work and things that they're going to get a lot of bang for their buck, so they can be repeated. That they're timeless. I mean, I read the comments from Ian Katz and Ben Frau.
So head of content at 4 and 5.
Yeah, exactly. They were talking yesterday. I mean, I think, you know, what Ben said is probably true. You know, it's cyclical. We've got to ride it out. We've got to hold our nerve. The commissions will come back. The market will pick up. We need to be creative. We need to think in the production sector of different funding models to try to get commissions. And that's fine, but that's pretty tough if you're a freelance and you're looking for work, and people are saying that, you know, well, we might have something in a couple of months or after the summer. That's tough.
I mean, Adam Ian's right, isn't he? I mean, if you're a runner or a producer or a director, suddenly seeing a load of your work or potential work disappears can be pretty alarming.
Yeah, I mean, I've got friends who work in that industry, and I know how hand to mouth it can be, and how you're going from contract to contract, and you know, that's a tricky, you know, world to step through, and you know, when these things happen, you know, it's really hard, and there's no simple solution. You don't have it. It's not in your control, really.
We had a note from a listener, Phil Smith, posted, having worked in it for 20-odd years, it's clear that it's in total crisis. Hundreds of directors and editorial staff have been out of work for 6-plus months, and the future looks worse. I mean, I guess one of the dangers is, you know, you have to go and do something, that people leave the sector. Do we then end up with a bit of a skills gap when it comes back?
Yeah, it is a danger. It really is. And, you know, there are a lot of talented people who may well be in that area who are thinking that they've worked in the business for a long time, and the cost of living is going up. People are struggling generally. They've got to pay bills, and there may well come a time for a lot of people where they've got a tough choice to make, where they either wait it out and wait for the market to pick up, or take jobs at lower rates, or think I need to get some money, and I need to maybe think about something else, which would be a real shame. It would be a real shame. In the States, it's slightly different. I've just come back from America, as I was telling you before we started recording, and the unscripted world over there seems kind of open.
Yes.
The writer's strike has kind of freed up a lot of schedules and a lot of diaries for talent. And I think there is a very good market for unscripted outside of the UK. Mm. But here, it's a pretty tough world at the moment.
Yeah, it was noticeable this week. I think ABC released a schedule that had one scripted show on it. It was basically because they're not going to be able to fill it, and that's reruns of Abbott Elementary. So the entirety of their primetime schedule from September is going to be unscripted.
A lot of placards over there last week. I can tell you, going into meetings, there was a lot of pickets and placards. The thing about them was that they were all brilliantly well written. all of the messages on the placards, you could tell, were written by writers because they were very well scripted.
Thinking about money, and obviously we're thinking about the people who don't have jobs at the moment or are finding it tough. The other people have been looking at some figures to make sure that their jobs are safe, as in the radio industry, as the new RAJAR data has just come out. We're going to cover this even more in our Patreon, but Adam, as we said, one of your areas of expertise. Just having a look through the headlines, let's start with the Today programme. Not great for them. Down about a million over the year?
Yeah, I think it's about 800,000. What I would say is that was against a beginning of the Ukraine war period.
Yes.
So if you, depending which, you know, if you go back 6 months, it's about 150,000. So I think, it's undoubtedly, it's not great. And I think there's something interesting in speech radio, maybe more upmarket speech radio seems to have taken a hit this time round. I'm bit of a broken record on these kind of things, but I always look in the slightly longer term. It's not just a single quarter, so let's see what happens. But yeah, when you could look at something like LBC's done fine, for example, even some of the, although they're much smaller, it's got to be said, the sort of talk radios and GB News's, the radio bits, have done okay. Whereas even Times Radio hasn't done that great this time round. So
yeah, Times Radio is sort of stuck in the kind of half million mark, isn't it? It sort of peaked at about 700,000, and it added Fee and Jane probably that would have been in this quarter too. There's a bit of me that feels it deserves more than it's getting, but maybe that's just my media liberal elite coming through.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it is definitely a good product.
Yeah.
I think it will be interesting to see how they sort of work with it and try and broaden it up. I mean, I guess, they're speaking very heavily to the Times reader. I don't think if you're a reader of their online or their paper product, you're very well aware of it. I just wonder beyond that, and obviously poaching people like, Fee and everybody, that would be the way you would want to do it. But, as I think we all know, it's not as simple as that. Mm. And it's not like everyone's going to, I'll routine my dials now because my favourite podcasters have gone to Times Radio.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? Particularly at breakfast time. Ian, are you a Today programme listener in the morning?
I think if you're a serious journalist, politician, then the Today programme is built into your DNA. It's the programme that you kind of instinctively reach for. But it's got to adapt different times. It's got to look at listening habits, just as we have to listen to viewing habits. I think the Today programme will be here long after we have. Maybe not you. You're younger than us, younger than me certainly. But I think the Today programme, is just a staple.
Do you think Today's change, they're trying to change it a little bit? Do you think they've been influenced by the arrival of Times Radio and they've had a look, or it just kind of blunders along doing the same thing?
I don't know. I mean, there's changes of staff, you get people like sort of the Amal Rajan and, the sort of the personnel, and it will, he sounds very different to John Humphreys, let's say, sort of a few years ago. So, it will change. I think as audiences change and the expectations of audiences, sometimes we kind of forget. I think people think you grow into a radio station, whereas actually radio stations tend to adapt along the way. And if you listen to, if we all went back and found some tapes of Radio 4 from 20 years ago, we would be shocked what it actually sounded like then compared to now. So yeah, of course it's going to change.
The station that's done pretty well is Boom Radio. So this is a service for the over 60s. It was set up in the middle of lockdown. It's got a lot of very, very heritage presenters who are doing shows from home. And it's been put together by Phil Riley and David Lloyd, who are sort of storied radio execs, both of which had sort of retired and were doing other things before they went, should we have one last go at doing this? And so they kind of bootstrapped it. They've raised a decent amount of money to support it. But it's been going gangbusters, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're up triple digits year on year. I mean, it's just unheard of. And I think, I was talking about some of the older listeners we'd found a dropped off on some of the BBC stations. Well, that is not happening with Boom Radio. In fact, Boom Radio is even picking up some 1524s. I mean, they're doing really well. And I think they found a really cost-efficient model. You mentioned they're all doing it from home, so no one has to invest in expensive studios or anything. They've got Bauer, I think it is, doing their sales. Probably their biggest cost is distribution, so getting out on DAB and things like that, but you can do that reasonably cost efficiently. And I think, you know, they've now got the kind of numbers that will absolutely get them on agency plans, which means they've got a legit business. This isn't a hobby. You know, it might have started as a hobby. They've stumbled into, or not stumbled into, they're really good. They've created something really quite remarkable, you know, to the point that who knows, someone could come knocking at their door going, hey, we'll buy that from you.
Well, they're basically adding 100,000 listeners a quarter, which is brilliant. And I was talking to them a little while ago. They're spending quite a decent amount of money. Well, it's kind of tactical money on marketing. And marketing to kind of 65 pluses is things like ITV3 and actually Facebook, where obviously a lot of 65 pluses are. That's a very cheap way of actually buying media and reaching audiences for a group that don't get advertised to with interesting products very often. So they're converting that marketing into listeners. So they've really sort of stumbled over a bit of a goldmine.
We have to start a radio station, the three of us now, and really go for the 80 plus audience. I think we could do it.
Well, the best thing about older audiences is they listen for a really long period of time, which is great for hours, which is where commercial radio makes its money.
Let's do it.
Okay, we'll take a pause there and carry on the Rajar discussion over on our Patreon. That's at patreon.com/mediapod. Oh, it's a bit like handing over to Longwave. Anyway, we'll be back with some BAFTAs chat and more from Ian and Adam after this.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Rethink Audio have a lovely new documentary series launching this week called Intersections. With music by Brian Eno, it's a trip through Detroit with some of its most influential residents. You can download it now. There's a link in the show notes. And here's the trailer.
I never liked the analogy of Detroit being this ghost town. I never liked it because I would come home and I would see all my people. My people live here. I moved to New York and I went all over the world. When I came home, my people were still here. My family is here. So how do you talk about a city like it's disappeared?
Right here, want to give it to me anyway, because look here, girl. I know the boy. She did, baby. Look, I know the man and I know kids. Yes, I need that.
My name is Jessica Kerr Moore. This is Intersections Detroit. Resilience and hustle from the heart of the D. Follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find great stories.
And we're back for part two. Time for some news in brief. The BAFTA TV Awards were on Sunday with Channel 4's Derry Girls winning Best Scripted Comedy, Best Female Performance in a Comedy Programme, and also Best Comedy Writer for Lisa McGee. Ian, we talked about ITN's coverage of Ukraine. Now, Adam, I know previously you were never a fan of tape-delayed BAFTAs. If you looked at Adam's Twitter over, I don't know, the past 10 years, you never a fan.
To be fair, that was the film BAFTAs in particular, which did go live for half an hour this year, but only half an hour, you know, because who wants to try and use social media to upsell your awards ceremony that you're broadcasting to millions of people? But, you know, that's not my choice. That's
just your opinion there. What caught your attention with the BAFTAs this year?
I thought mostly it was a decent set. I mean, as you say, Derry Girls did well. I personally would like to have seen Slow Horses, which is a particular favourite of mine, do a little bit better. And the really odd one to me was the international one, where it was the Dharma Ryan Murphy thing, which felt a bit schlocky to me. And it was very pop. Don't get me wrong, it was enormously pop. I'm sure it was one of Netflix's biggest hits. But I would have sort of something like The White Lotus or The Bear on Disney Plus FX would have felt to me more like better series, at least of the nominees in those categories. But, you know, you can't complain too much. I think across the board, I mean, Sherwood maybe could have done a bit better. I think I sometimes wonder, you know, if something came out last summer that everyone's forgotten about it by the following. I'm not sure when The Jury sat, but, you know, it probably wasn't that long ago.
I mean, Ian, there's a lot on television now, isn't there? There's a lot to try and capture in an award ceremony.
I completely agree on the international. I mean, that was nuts. White Lotus has got to win that. You know, that's the standout international series of the past 12 months, and it had to win. I actually do think Rob and Ramesh did a really good job at hosting it this year. It's a tough gig, isn't it? Though, you know, all of those award shows are really difficult, but I thought they came across really well. There seems to be this trend at the moment as well for cutting away and doing backstage interviews and things like that. And I slightly question the value of those, if I'm honest. I think at the Film Awards, there wasn't an awful lot to be gained from it. They're trying to innovate and try and do things differently, but I'm not sure it really feels like you're going sort of behind the scenes. It's just literally, you've won, how do you feel? You know, that, without any disrespect to any of the interviewers, I'm just not sure it adds a lot. People, they go on for a long time. It's about pace and keeping things going.
I mean, the main thing we watch award shows for is the hope for a disaster. I mean, that's it really, that someone falls over, that someone's drunk. That's the main excitement of a live.
Yeah, and the reaction service of the losers. I mean, I was watching it with my two teenage daughters, and they were saying, like, you know, somebody wins and they have about 3 seconds of the person going up to collect the award, and then they bounce around all the people and you're looking for them, and some people do it really well. I noticed a couple of people turning to whoever they were with saying, oh, that was really well deserved, I didn't really want it, you know. Lucy Beaumont actually did a really good reaction, because she looked at the camera and mouthed, I'm not happy about that, when she lost out on, I think, female comedy performer or something like that. But yeah, you're looking for the car crash moment these days.
I must admit, I quite like it when someone really does just can't believe that they've been robbed and is not disguising it at all, because it's probably what some of us at home are feeling. How did you give it to that show?
what on Eurovision that the French act did not do very well, and it was very clear that she was unhappy by this and was definitely not playing along for the spirit of the show. Speaking about the Best International Award, that was presented by Harriet Dyer and Patrick Bramall of Colin from Accounts. Have you been watching Colin from Accounts?
I absolutely binged it over one weekend. Too. It's fantastic. I can't recommend it enough. Everyone should watch it if you haven't already.
It's great, isn't it, Ian?
As I said, I just come back from America. I watched one episode on the plane on the way back and thought it was sensational, and came back and watched the entire series all in one go. It's brilliant. They're married, real life couple, right? Yeah. And that chemistry is superb. She is brilliant. He is self-deprecating and natural. And, you know, the dog and the I mean it's genius. I think it's one of the breakout hits of the last 5 years, I would say. It's brilliant.
So if you haven't seen it, it's on BBC iPlayer, and you can catch up with the whole thing there. Something that was confirmed on Monday, and something we touched on in the show last week, Vice Media has filed for bankruptcy as lenders ready to buy the company's assets for about $225 million. Bear in mind, it was valued at about $5 billion at the height of their fame slash infamy. Ian, have you been following what's been happening with Vice? Because they did a decent push into news and telly news as well.
I think it's a real shame. I think the demise of Vice and BuzzFeed is sad for journalism. And, you know, a combination of changing viewer habits, the digital advertising downturn, the funding model. I think it's I think it's a real shame. I mean, I think it goes back to the point that, you know, quality journalism costs. It costs a lot of money. Some of the things that are doing well in that area with those particular sort of companies is investigations. Investigations require two things: time and money. You can't put pressure on them, and you have to invest in them. I think it's a real shame. I guess it kind of shows that, you know, all the excitement about startups was genuine and justified, and it seems like, you know, it is retreating to the sort of the old established companies and models that are surviving and doing well. It's not great.
Well, Adam, it's not like the desire to reach younger audiences has gone away at all. Has just the money run out to keep trying?
I think, it feels like, unfortunately, the business model they were using just it's shifting along too much. Funny enough, I'm reading Ben Smith, who was his latest book called Traffic. He was he started BuzzFeed News, in fact, and was at Politico and most recently New York Times, and he now has Semaphore. And the, you know, what was clear at the time, you know, when BuzzFeed was in its heyday, you know, remember The Dress, you know, which was easily the biggest BuzzFeed story of all time. You know, they were rapidly turning on new servers and so on. And that was driven by Facebook, and they were really in with Facebook. And, you know, they would call them up and talk to the engineers over there and work out. And, you know, the rise of Facebook and the rise of BuzzFeed kind of mirror one another. And then Facebook, well, you know, we know it's an older thing now, it's different, and they'll change their algorithm, and suddenly they're not generating the traffic to you, and suddenly the model's changing. And arguably we're going to see that again as we move into this AI sort of period, where if I type a search into Google, Google's maybe going to tell me the answer and not even send me to a page where I find the answer, which will change again everyone's business models, because I'm reliant on that advertising traffic or somehow getting me to your site where you're going to, in one way or the other, monetize me. And unfortunately, what we're seeing is, or it feels to me we're seeing, is we're seeing these business models move on quite rapidly, and we're not seeing the companies, unfortunately, be able to keep up with that. So what was a great business model 5 years ago suddenly isn't just working today. And, you know, there were probably other problems there, I think, with Vice. I think it's probably safe to say, but that's probably part of it.
Okay, thanks both. Time before we go for the media quiz. Now, I'm not entirely sure what I've done to producer Matt, but he's given me somewhat of a challenge, and I think it's to promote the fact that you can now watch the media podcast on YouTube. So he's decided that today's media quiz will be charades on the radio.
And it's gonna make a good podcast.
And I am forced to do this. So
you're going to do all the charades.
I'm going to do all the charades. Okay, so you're both very lucky. You've got to sort of buzz in with your name if you can guess what I'm suggesting to you. So, Ian, you'll say
Ian.
Adam, you'll say
Adam.
Right, here we go. So, it's maybe some silence on the podcast. Catch up on the YouTube channel. Just search The Media Podcast on YouTube to find it. Right, I'm going to do
the whole thing.
Good.
Right.
Sorry, Ian, the whole thing.
Correct.
Driving.
Harry and Meghan, paparazzi.
I'm afraid you've got to buzz in.
Oh, Ian. Harry and Meghan. Harry, Meghan.
Yes. Do you want to describe how I suggested that to you?
Well, you were driving fairly erratically, it would seem, and you were also trying to take pictures while you were doing it.
There we go. My excellent work there. I mean, are we seeing history repeat itself with Harry and Meghan?
I don't know. And I think what I do think is really worrying about that whole story is that, you know, something happens, something clearly happened. Their spokesperson puts out a statement. The NYPD puts out a statement, but immediately there is so much backlash and opinion about it without letting, you know, viewers or listeners decide. You know, clearly there was an issue. The PAPs were involved. It may or may not have been extremely frightening, traumatic, whatever. We don't know exactly what happened. But immediately there's this, you know, kind of they're exaggerating, they're lying, it's not true. And I think that's not good. That's not great. There's immediately this sort of horrible kind of, assumptions, speculation, suspicion about the whole thing, rather than, you know, if that was anyone else, that would be, there was an incident, they say this, the police say this, there you go. That should be factual reporting, and it's not factual. It's been sullied, I think, by opinion and presumption and quite unsavoury kind of comments. I don't even think it's been journalism in some cases.
Okay, point to Ian. Question number two.
Whole thing. Texting, throwing away money.
Twitter. Ian Twitter.
Elon Musk.
New CEO.
It's NBC Universal. What's her name? The new ad executive who's come over from NBC Universal.
Yes, I will take that. I'll give Adam the point there. So Twitter does have a new CEO, Linda Yaccarino, starting soon. And my obviously my description there was Elon saying he will tweet whatever he wants, even if he loses money.
Right.
That was what I was trying to describe.
I don't think the mime was in any way representative of that. It looked ridiculous.
Well, definitely no point for you on that.
He probably will lose money by tweeting, but yeah.
What do you think is in Linda's intray when she gets into the world?
Making a lot of friends with the advertising community. Mm. I mean, by the sound of things, she was really popular with the New York ad community, I think. And so in that sense, it's a strong hire. I don't think anyone who uses Twitter can doubt that the quality of the advertising has gone down in recent months. You see some very odd adverts popping up. I certainly do in my feed. And I think, I mean, there's a lot of rebuilding they need to do about the product and get users back on. And, you know, who knows, you know, the whole kind of subscription thing and what people are getting for subscription. I mean, there's a lot, which we probably can't do in a media quiz at the end. But definitely getting advertisers back on, because I'm sure it's still hemorrhaging money, and they need ads, because that's the surest way of bringing revenues in.
I mean, Ian, media journalism, we've all been sort of obsessed with Twitter for the last 10 years. I mean, I see less tweets now. I mean, I'm still sort of obsessed by it, but there is less going on now, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, I think in the TV industry, we have, over the past 10 years, looked at Twitter as a kind of a barometer for opinion. Certainly, if you've made a program and you're at home watching it go out and you've got to wait till the next morning for the overnights, you're looking at Twitter and it's like, are we trending? Are we not? It's not a barometer these days for viewers. You can be trending really well and have terrible ratings, and vice versa. It's not the product that it once was, and it's very important that if they want it to have a future, that they sort that out.
I think it's still somewhere where you find out what's going on quickly. I think journalists still use it a lot. Whether they're just talking to other journalists is another question. And you can still, because there isn't that live. I don't think any of the other platforms really have that live, this is happening now, if I want to see what's happening. But I completely get it's not a true reflection of the population of a whole. It's definitely a very specific subsection.
Interestingly, my daughters, 15 and 16, you know, TikTok is not just, you know, I think people of my age, and I may well have had this conversation in my own home, have, you know, kind of wrote off TikTok as just, why are you just watching just people, you know, lip syncing or doing makeup tutorials and things like that. They are getting their news through TikTok, and they are interested enough to cherry pick the stories which are coming out of TikTok and then go away and find it and mine other sources for it, which I think is interesting. And, you know, that is adapting. We need to adapt to the way that younger people are consuming information. But then, you know, are sensible and smart enough to go off and find you know, properly verified stories.
Well, there's a lot of data, isn't there, actually, that people use TikTok as a search engine. And it's, yeah, it's not a bad search engine, is it?
Yeah, you say that. I don't know. I don't really use TikTok.
Adam,
but,
disappointed.
I know. It could get me started about this. I didn't like the algorithm. And I know they were going to do that grand reset thing that you could completely reset your profiles, because I was seeing videos I did not want to see and I just could not unlike them enough to get rid of them. But no, people, absolutely people do. And I think that there is this wider thing of actually, you know, bigger concern of the open web and the closed sort of web that people sit on a platform. And actually the idea of even opening a browser to certain young people, I think is a bit of an anathema, because you live in TikTok and you do search on TikTok. And of course you will find an answer of sorts. There's enough on there that you will find something.
Right, question number three. So it's a point each so far.
The whole thing.
Singing.
Eurovision.
Singing. No.
You're
watching. Oh, was this the number of Eurovision viewers?
Adam. Yes.
There were a lot of them.
There was. Yeah. Eurovision final is the most watched ever. Well, most watched recently, as far back as the current methodology seems to be.
Yeah, I'm sure that sometime in the 1970s, when there was nothing else to watch, most people were watching it.
Did you watch?
No.
Ian, did you watch?
I hate it.
Oh, God. I thought it was quite good. I thought the BBC did a good job.
I think the BBC did do a good job. I don't hate the production. I think they did a fantastic job. Hannah Waddingham was the smash hit star of that whole thing. And Mel and her milk churning was fabulous. But Eurovision, I just hate it. It's rubbish, isn't it?
I don't mind
Australia in it.
The fact that it exists is not a problem for me. And I enjoy the fact that many, many people watch it, like a number of reality shows that I don't watch. And that I, you know, the quality in it. But no, I mean, it, you know, musically, it's not to my taste, shall we say?
Well, on that bombshell, thank you both for being here. Adam, you are our winner. Congratulations. You get to, as a special prize, you get to go off and pick next year's Eurovision entrant for Britain. Well done.
Good luck.
Wow, you wait till you see what I'd pick.
And so how can people keep up with your work?
You can find me at Adam Bowie, obviously not on TikTok, or at adambowie.com.
Ian?
I am on Twitter at IJ Rumsey, I think. You can watch my Netflix account if you like. I'll give you my password if you
want. For the next few months, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, pleasure to be here.
Lovely. Great to see you both. Thanks, everyone, for joining us today. We're recording at the very classy, yet easy-to-use London podcast studios in central London, complete with a full HD fix rig and a bowl of sweets at the entrance. We highly recommend them. Book your next recording here. That's thelondonpodcaststudios.com. There's a link in the show notes. And to hear a more in-depth Rajar discussion between myself and Adam and Ian, you need to join our Patreon. There's several hours of insight to access. No, not just from the Rajar chat, though. It's decent length. Just head to patreon.com/mediapod because you get access to all of our previous deep dives as well. patreon.com/mediapod. If you love the show and really enjoy what we do, we would really appreciate you joining. patreon.com/mediapod. Remember also, you can tell your colleagues about us. Just mention the show maybe on LinkedIn or Twitter or even TikTok. We've got accounts on most of those places, so even just a retweet is nice. And remember to follow the show in your podcast app of choice, or visit podfollow.com/themediapodcast each week. We're on YouTube as well. Just go into YouTube and search The Media Podcast. My name is Matt Deegan. The producer was Matt Hill. It was a Rethink Audio production. I'll see you next week.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.